This week in KMA Land, Summit Carbon Solutions announces carbon pipeline route change. KMA Land residents react to Summit's announcement. Clarinda Police Ceremony honors fallen officers. Shen School Board sets administrators' supervisor salaries. U.S. House passes E-15 legislation. And Clarinda Council sets city employee salaries. I'm Mike Peterson. For the past 5 years, plans for a proposed carbon sequestration project in KMA Land have stirred the emotions of residents both for and against the project. On Wednesday, Summit Carbon Solutions announced a major change in the proposed pipeline project. Ethan Hewitt has the story.
Well, in a news release yesterday, Summit officials stated they have submitted a revised filing with the Iowa Utilities Commission that removes certain pipeline route segments, simplifying the overall project while maintaining the core infrastructure needed to move forward efficiently and responsibly. Company officials say the updated filing would remove proposed routes in Shelby, Pottawatomie, Montgomery, Adams, Page, Fremont, Mitchell, and Worth counties, while also reducing mileage in Crawford, Floyd, Sioux, and Dickinson counties, ultimately removing more than 400 landowners from the project footprint and reducing the overall scope of the project by about 200 miles. While the multi-state carbon capture and sequestration project would still include 27 ethanol plants in Iowa, company officials say they no longer plan to pursue routes to Green Plains, Shenandoah, Poet Corning, Poet Hamlintown, or Absolute Energy. After the IUC approved Summit's initial permit in 2024, with some caveats, including approval in North and South Dakota, the project has faced multiple legal and legislative challenges. A group of landowners in the Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club sued to try and overturn the permit approval, while South Dakota lawmakers denied Summit's permit twice and passed a law banning the use of eminent domain for carbon pipelines. While the initial proposal called for carrying product from 5 states to a sequestration site in North Dakota, in the release yesterday, Summit officials say the project will now travel west through Nebraska towards a sequestration site in Wyoming. In the release, company spokesperson Joe Griffin said the focus is on building the portions of the system that are economically positioned to move forward now, while leaving the door open to future expansion.
Ethan Hewitt reporting.
Montgomery County resident Jan Norris is among the project's vocal critics. Norris tells KMA News she was delighted to hear of Summit's plans to eliminate most of the pipeline's route south of Crawford County.
Obviously, when they first began in 2021, they said they would be operational in 2024. Then they pushed that back to be operational in 2026. Now we're halfway through the year and they don't even have the ability to start construction and nowhere to take the CO2, so they've had to make some adjustments.
Norris believes financial setbacks and construction delays led to the company changing the project's route.
Since this project has gone on for so long and is still not anywhere close to being done anywhere where I can even start construction, they probably had to make some adjustments for their investors. I would guess that the $1 billion that they've spent already is starting to really strain them without any results.
Norris also believes the outcry over the project influenced the company's decision. She credits Shelby County officials with leading the charge against the project, believing the CO2 pipeline wasn't right for their county.
Shelby County picked up the mantle and worked really hard. They were the first ones to put a zoning ordinance in place to try and keep the pipe from being too close to the city of Erling. You know, 130 feet is too close to a small little town, even if it is a small little town. The plume modeling that we finally eventually got our hands on showed that that is a real problem.
Despite Summit's announcement, Nora says the issue isn't over. She adds her heart goes out to residents still in the path of the project's altered route. Reaction poured in after the U.S. House this week passed a resolution supporting year-round nationwide sales of higher ethanol blend fuels. On a bipartisan 218-203 vote Wednesday, the House passed the Nationwide Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act of 2025, which amends the Clean Air Act to allow for the year-round nationwide sale of gasoline blended with up to 15% ethanol, commonly referred to as E15. While year-round sales are allowed in 8 Midwestern states under an EPA waiver, sales of the higher ethanol blended fuel are typically not allowed in most states between June 1st and September 15th. All of Iowa's U.S. representatives voted in favor of the bill, including Congressman Randy Feenstra. Speaking of the House floor ahead of the vote, Feenstra says producers and consumers alike will benefit from the year-round sales of E15.
And there's a reason why Iowa farmers and families are so passionate about this issue. It will expand the market for farmers, it will secure energy independence, and it will lower the gas prices for all our families. Gridlock in D.C. has prevented this passage of E15 for over a decade, and today we are finally taking action.
Feenstra served as co-chair of the House's Rural Domestic Energy Council, formed after a similar provision on E15 was stripped from a funding bill in January. The whole Republican says E15 means cheaper fuel prices for motorists.
In Iowa, the option to buy E15 means lower gas prices by up to 40 cents a gallon. It drives nationwide savings of about $20 billion. It will boost corn demand by 2.4 billion bushels and increase farm income by $14 million. E15 is truly a game changer for our state, and we want to see these benefits shared across the country.
While presidential waivers over the past several years have allowed year-round sales, Iowa Congressman Zach Nunn and the rest of Iowa's congressional delegation have advocated for E15 to provide more certainty for retailers. Nunn says the higher ethanol blend fuels can also help secure energy independence.
We get to choose between a fuel that is grown literally right here in the United States for energy independence, or if we continue to be reliant on foreign powers and adversaries and subsidizing their ability to get fuel to the rest of the world while America does the heavy lifting.
Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri are among the top 10 corn-producing states in the country, and about 40% of U.S. corn is used to produce ethanol. The bill now heads to the U.S. Senate. KMA-land law enforcement officials took time out Wednesday afternoon for a solemn service honoring the Thin Blue Line. Loretta High School senior Noah Harris, who is also a police intern, with a saxophone rendition of the Star Spangled Banner, opening the traditional officers' memorial service at the Clarinda Cemetery's Tomb of the Unknown. Clarinda Police holds the ceremony each year during National Police Officers Memorial Week to honor law enforcement officials who lost their lives in the line of duty. In his annual address, Clarinda Police Chief Keith Brothers says officers put their lives on the line every day. But Brothers says it's not something they do, it's who they are.
Law enforcement is a profession that's built on commitment. A commitment to protect people we may not know, to respond when others are running away, and to stand in difficult moments when it matters most. The men and women we honor today understood that commitment. They lived it, and they gave their lives for it.
Brothers says 111 law enforcement personnel lost their lives in the U.S. last year. While saying that number is down from previous years, the chief adds that's still too many.
Each one of those 111 represents a life of service, a family that's been forever changed, and a sacrifice that we should never, ever forget. Behind every officer lost is a story. They have family, they have friends, they have a career of service that, in many cases, asks more of them than most people will ever fully understand or comprehend.
Brothers also paid tribute to the unsung heroes, family members who stand behind their loved ones, who log long hours and face dangerous situations while protecting the public. He says their sacrifices need to be recognized as well.
There's always somebody out working, patrolling your community or your state or your county. It's just really important that we make sure that we thank those people who sacrifice so much, because not everybody can be a law enforcement spouse. I've been tremendously blessed with a wonderful spouse. I couldn't have had a better one, a law enforcement wife. But it's not easy, and it takes two. And sometimes we lose sight of that.
Members of the Clarinda American Legion Post Sergei Post fire the traditional rifle volley prior to the playing of taps.
Eight,
Representatives of the Page County Sheriff's Office, the Iowa State Patrol, and retired law enforcement personnel joined Clarinda police officers and the public in attending Wednesday's service. Salaries for the Shenandoah School District's top officials are set for next school year. By a 3-0 vote late Monday afternoon, the Shenandoah School Board approved 3% base salary increases for the district's supervisors and administrators and base salary increases for non-negotiated salaried staff members totaling $1,280. Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Kerry Nelson says those staff members also receive a one-time extra salary supplement stipend, similar to one the district's instructors receive in the 2026-27 school year.
We looked at this very similar to how we worked with the teachers this year and are recommending that $1,280 is placed on their base and that they would receive the extra salary supplement.
Paid in one check in December, the stipend totals $100 times the years of service to the district in fiscal year 2027. Also approved was a $1 per hour increase for non-negotiated hourly staff. Board members also shifted Forrest Schmoker from hourly to salaried at $80,000 for additional job duties, including maintenance projects management and transportation fleet management. The Shenandoah School District stands to lose thousands of dollars in revenue from a property tax relief bill approved in this year's legislative session. Prior to adjourning for the year, the 2026 Iowa General Assembly approved a comprehensive bill providing property taxpayers $350 million in relief next fiscal year and $4 billion over 6 years. It also includes a 2% cap on property tax revenue growth for cities and counties, and shifts the amount of secured advanced vision for education or save dollars dedicated specifically to property tax relief from 7% to 25% by 2031. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Tuesday morning, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Kerry Nelson said officials with Piper Sandler, the district's financial consultants, have estimated the district's revenue loss from the SAVE change.
With that cap in place, Shenandoah in 2027 will lose $86,268 worth of SAVE funds. And so you think of that and you think, that's the better part of a new bus or a leased bus. You think of the cost of that. And then in 28, that's over $100,000 that will not be there.
Nelson says Shenandoah's situation is different from other school districts in that it's not using SAVE dollars to pay off past bond issues. Pay increases are set for Clarinda City employees and police officers for the upcoming fiscal year. At its regular meeting Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council unanimously approved compensation adjustments for all city employees except for full-time hourly police officers for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. By a 4-0 vote, the council also approved similar percentage increases for full-time police officers in fiscal 27. Clarinda City Manager Gary McLarnon says after the Employee Benefits Committee meeting last week, the recommendation was to grant the increases to the city initially budgeted for, accounting to a roughly 3.75% total package increase.
Just to refresh your memory, that was 50 cents an hour for permanent part-time employees, a dollar an hour for full-time employees, and 3.75% for salaried employees. So we do have this as part of the resolution, and the committee wants to recommend that approval.
McLarnon says no alterations were made to employee benefits because there were no major changes in insurance premiums. He notes that a slight change was made to city holidays, including December 24th, as an official day off for the majority of employees.
What we're recommending as an official paid holiday. Lead Center and Library are already closed those days, so we're just looking at, okay, let's just add another holiday then and have all the departments closed, except for police department, the fire department.
In other budgetary matters, the council also held a public hearing and approved the fiscal year 2026 budget amendment. McLarnon says the amendment adds roughly $372,000 in revenues and $382,000 in expenditures, primarily due to various grants for multiple departments and an equipment purchase for public works.
The library and actually fire department both had grants that were received, so we put that on the revenue side, but we also have to put the money on the expenditure side for what they're expending for that. Probably the other big one, we had $65,000 that we spent for a piece of equipment, the mini excavator that we bought for Public Works that we did a budget for, so that's in here.
Councilmember Kaylee Neal abstained from voting on the police officer wage increase due to family ties to one of the officers. Shenandoah's Fire Department is expanding its vehicle fleet. By unanimous vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council approved the purchase of a 2026 Chevrolet 3500 HD Silverado, totaling $49,235. Shenandoah Fire Chief Justin Marshall says funding for the vehicle came from a series of fundraisers plus grants accumulated over the past few years.
We started the fund probably 2 years ago. This is a combination of grants that have been written, typical fundraisers. We've done our pancake feeds. We've done a golf tournament for this. So we've raised about $95,000 or $96,000 about over the course of 2 years. So we set up a fund for this. It's just kind of a savings account, and it's worked out really well. So that's what this is going to be paid out of.
Marshall says rural townships and residents also chipped in on the vehicle's purchase.
A couple of the townships did donate some extra money that they had after they paid everything they were obligated to. So some rural residents kicked in just in their own, out of their own pockets as well. So, but yeah, this is totally donated money. There's not a tax dollar in it. So.
Marshall expects the vehicle to arrive in about 8 to 10 weeks and then be sent to Snyder, Nebraska for conversion into a rural brush truck with equipment to battle brush fires in outlying areas. Speaking of fire trucks, the Lenox Fire Department's vehicle fleet is getting a much-needed upgrade later this summer. Fire officials recently ordered a new 2027 Freightliner M2 106 Plus chassis, which will serve as the second pumper truck for the department. Lenox Fire Chief Ryan Brown told KMA News plans call for the drivetrain to replace their current pumper, which was built in 1985. In addition to wear and tear, Brown says the old pumper is out of date on safety issues.
So it's, you know, 41 years old, and a lot of safety features are not there and back in 85 like they are now. And to be honest with you, the big thing on that is safety. And then with my new staff coming on, you know, younger people coming in, there's not a lot of people that know how to drive manuals, and that is a manual with the 2-speed. So that was another kind of indicator that we need to do something, where everything pretty much new now is automatic.
Brown says plans call for a new vehicle have been in the works for a few years after initially getting a quote of roughly $700,000 for an entirely new pumper truck. Brown says the opportunity arose to keep the current fire apparatus but place it on a new chassis. Brown says the current pumper apparatus has operated well.
We kind of did some options, looking around at different options, and the first priority was to inspect our tank to make sure it was good, and we did inspect it and looked at some other things, and I just had the pump rebuilt a couple years ago. So we felt really good about this opportunity to come up of getting the new chassis instead of buying a whole new fire truck.
In addition to providing updated safety features, Brown says the new cab will be a four-door and include built-in SCBA seats, removing an extra step for crews at the scene of a fire. Brown says the new chassis is expected to arrive in late July or early August before crews begin transitioning the fire apparatus and other necessary equipment to the new vehicle. Pottawatomie County officials seek funding to improve the safety of a dangerous intersection. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the county's Board of Supervisors unanimously approved signing a letter of support for the county's secondary roads grant application to the Safe Streets for All program. County Engineer Andy Wicks says the grant application primarily seeks funding for implementing more safety features along Old Lincoln Highway, stretching from the Council Bluffs city limits up through Crescent and to the Honey Creek area. Wicks says a recent safety action plan reviewing crash history ranked that stretch of highway as one of the county's riskiest roads.
And Old Lincoln Highway scored number one for most fatalities, most property damage, accidents, as well as injury crashes. And so that's what kind of prong one or sheet one of the handout is showing a heat map of all the crashes along Old Lincoln Highway in the last 10 years. So there've been several fatal, several injury and high cost property damage crashes.
Wick says the grant funding could help implement features such as adding rumble strips and paved shoulders and tightening up the road. Wick says the project would also include the stretch of highway through Crescent.
We would work with City Council of Crescent to determine what makes the most sense, but we would I would like to propose curb and gutter through Crescent to narrow up the lanes to slow people down And then we would look at reconfiguring parking along the urban corridor through Crescent as well.
Wick says the federal grant would cover 80% of the total project costs, with secondary roads providing a 20% local match. He notes the evaluation would also include several of the curves along Old Lincoln Highway.
There's several tight curves that have suboptimal turning radius, and we would reevaluate every single curve along Old Lincoln Highway, at least for that, from Council Bluffs city limits up to the Honey Creek exit.
Wick says the grant's second prong is reaching out to communities across the country, or county rather, and look for pedestrian crossings where they can install new beacons. Wick says he and his staff plan to reach out to other communities for potential letters of support. Sydney officials are among those counting down to the beginning of a new swimming season. At its regular meeting this week, the Sydney City Council approved plugging one of the main drains of the pool due to a leak in the line, with the caveat that a written bid be presented to the city soon to instead place a liner or sleeve in the line. Sydney Mayor Justin Shirley tells KMA News the small fracture was identified in a line between the pool's east and west drains last year, with any water that was going towards the west drain leaking out.
So at that time, we decided we'd probably just plug that west drain and bypass it all together and then just run everything off the east drain. Well, when we did the pool deck repairs, the company that handled the repairs in the pool deck said they actually have a liner that they can put in that line that would basically fill the crack in the water line without having to dig.
And Shirley says a leak on the pool deck was repaired earlier this spring. The mayor says renovations have also been made to the facility's pool house.
It's been painted, interior lighting's been put in place, just cosmetic updates mostly. A new roof went on it last summer. And then early this week, yesterday and today, the public works crew's been out power washing the pool and getting preparation to put some paint on the deck.
Shirley says the pool manager and assistant manager positions have been filled with several returning lifeguards. They hope to recruit a couple more lifeguards ahead of the summer season. Shirley says the pool is in a good position, staffing-wise. It was a show-and-tell session in the Clarinda School District 50 years in the making. Some Clarinda Elementary School students learned about the contents of a time capsule buried in 1976 in a student assembly last Friday morning. Clarinda Elementary Principal Leslie Ehlers told 3rd through 6th graders, instructors, plus local residents attending the assembly, the plans originally call for the time capsule to be opened 100 years later.
Students, teachers, and community members gathered just like we are today. They placed items in a vault, wondering what the future would be like and who would open it one day. Today, we are those people. How exciting is that?
Tom Snyder, member of the Clarinda High School class of 1980, along with district maintenance director Justin Ridner, excavated and opened the time capsule Easter weekend. Much of the time capsule's contents were destroyed by water damage, but a number of materials survived, such as items from the 1976 U.S. Bicentennial. Sixth grader Adlin Fiddler is a member of the elementary school's student council. Fiddler says a bicentennial plate was among the memorabilia.
A bicentennial plate is a decorative plate made to celebrate a 200th anniversary or a bicentennial of a country, state, town, church, school, organization, or historical event. The plate celebrates the 1776 to 1976 U.S. Bicentennial with a local Clarinda Page County focus.
Other salvaged items included uncirculated coins to be distributed to students in 2076, old newspapers and student classwork and artwork from 50 years ago. Other time capsule contents were placed on tables in the elementary school's cafeteria for viewing. Ridner says today's elementary school students are asked to place their own items in the capsule for its reopening in 2076.
The elementary students today, we challenged them today to come up with some things that they would like to add to it to tell their story, just like they did, you know, in 76. So then it will be opened in 2076, so another 50 years into the future, it'll be opened then. We've talked about some precautionary things to do to not be damaged by water in the future, maybe seal some things up a little better than what maybe they didn't think about 50 years ago.
Plans call for reburying the time capsule on Clarinda's last day of school. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land is a presentation of KMA News.